All right, welcome back to Podcast Recovery. We are your hosts, David O.
And Eric B.
Today we are joined by our special guest, Glenn. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Absolutely, man.
Of course.
Where are you from?
Chicago. So as of this morning, it snowed a little bit, so that's the kind of spring that's happening already here in Chicago today. So,
Oh, yeah.
It's not bad for March.
We're getting some flurries out here, so we're right there with you. And when were you first when were you first introduced to recovery?
So I probably probably 1997, 1998, I went to the wedding of my sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And she was marrying a Yale law grad, and he was an alcoholic. He was a recovering alcoholic. He was going to a program, a 12-step program, and first time I met him, so it's an outdoor wedding. It's mm-hmm. a dry wedding, which I didn't understand. You have a dry wedding, so of course I'm tailgating in the parking lot.
Of course.
So I see this guy, you know, first time I meet him, I see this guy, and I was never really, you know, associated with recovery, with a program.
Mm-hmm.
So I see him, he's dressed in deerskin shirt. They're up in Vermont, deerskin shirt, and he's got his arms out. He's kind of like flying through the woods, you know?
Nice.
And I'm like, you know what? I want nothing of recovery.
That sounds
awesome.
I want
awesome. Nothing to do with that. You know? Yeah, so, you know, I deemed myself not an alcoholic at that time. But that was the first time I came up for it. And then the first time I entered treatment was 2003, after an amazing story at the Masters.
Oh, nice.
The following week, I went into recovery in Laguna Beach.
All right.
So that's, you know, where I started.
All right. And how long have you been sober?
So as of May 24th, 2015, so nice. Over 3.5 years.
Nice. Congratulations. Well, without further ado, yeah, man, we'll turn it over to you. So pitter-patter, let's get at her.
All right. Thanks again, guys. So typically what I do is just walk through, you know, I follow the 12 steps, you know, 12-step program.
Mm-hmm.
So what I like to do is just kind of walk through my 12 steps. It talks about, you know, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol that allows you to become unmanageable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, coincidentally, when I just shared the first time I really came across a, you know, an alcoholic, you know, to that point, I always thought they were living under the bridge somewhere. you know, and here's a guy that, you know, pretty decent guy, and, you know, here he was struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidentally, at the same time, I knew that my life was started around 97. I knew my life was starting to revolve around alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Up to that point, I mean, I really didn't start drinking until I was 35. You know, I hear a lot of people start drinking at 13 and 14.
Yeah.
That wasn't me. I think I drank, so I went to Liberty University, and I think I drank a six-pack in college.
Huh.
You know, I think I drank a six-pack in high school. Yeah, so it's very unusual. But when I was 35, I was promoted to the executive ranks,
mm-hmm.
started traveling, and the expectation was, you know, you worked hard all day, you drank all night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a certain amount we could spend on our expense report, so we would drink that amount. And that was kind of a joke, and that's how things got kicked off.
Wow.
So that was 95. So between 95 and 97, 98, you know, there was a marker where I realized, hey, you know what, I probably am doing this too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at my daughter's dance recital.
Mm.
And, you know, typically a dance recital, they have 120 different little dances.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, yeah, my daughter, she's in number 5 and she's in number 101, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big gap in between. So I, you know, got some buddies together and I, you know, coerced them into tailgating out in the parking lot during this dance recital.
Oh, wow.
As I look back, you know, I can probably say, you know, that's not normal.
No, but not exactly.
So I started living my life around alcohol. I would go to events. I would always, you know, tee it up ahead of time. I would always start managing, make sure I had the right amount.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then, you know, early 2000, you know, I really started, you know, I started getting hangovers, started shaking a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember coming back. I traveled a lot, and I can remember coming back from L.A. to Chicago on a red eye. It was 6 a.m., and I drank for like 3, so I am hurt on the plane and sitting in first class. And the guy next to me said, "Man, you're having a tough morning, aren't you?" I'm like, "Absolutely, man." I said, "I just can't get it together." He goes, "Well, why don't you have some Bloody Marys?"
Oh, no.
I'm like, "Bloody Marys?" I said, "You out of your mind? I'm about ready to barf, man. That's like leaning into a punch."
Yeah.
He said, "No, have some Bloody Marys, man. You'll feel like $1 million." And I'm like, "No way." He goes, he ordered me 2 doubles, right?
Oh.
So I drank those.
Oof.
I felt like $1 million. And by the time I got off the plane, I was bombed again.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that started the next several years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a night would roll into the next morning. I drank the next morning. Boom, I'd be off to the races again. And I still held it together. You know, I had a very high-level job. I still held it together.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2003, I went to the Masters. I was invited down there for a work event by our PR agency. And went down the night before. And I can remember congratulating myself. Like, dinner the night before, I only had 2 glasses of wine.
Oh.
I'm like, man, that's a great win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these high-level people are there, and that's a great win. Next morning, I wake up, and it's pouring rain.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supposed to go see Tiger, and, you know, I had these, you know, expensive shoes on. And my hostess said, "Hey, why don't you go to the mall and get an old pair of shoes so you don't mess up your nice shoes," because mm-hmm. it was sloppy that day. I'm like, "That's a great idea."
Yeah.
So she goes, "Hey, do you want a Bloody Mary for the road?" I'm like, "Absolutely." So she filled a big Solo cup.
Ooh.
My favorite, the red ones.
Oh, yeah.
And,
of course.
Yeah, so I took it in the car. Well, anyhow, I had wet brain, whatever. But that one drink, I got absolutely bombed over it. I collapsed in the store. I fell. I hit my face.
Wow.
You know, my boss had to be called. My boss had to sit next to me and babysit me all the way home. You know, and he knew that I had a problem. There were select people that knew I had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I just, I had already to that point researched a recovery treatment center.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked a really great one. I picked it for all the right reasons. I picked it because it had a Pacific Ocean penthouse suite in this gorgeous mansion. You know, I picked it, you know, again, for the important reasons. You know, I picked it because, you know, I had a private chef that would cook me anything I want, private massage, private yoga on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
You know. And
rehab,
you know,
is really all about the amenities.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, so we had groups that were overlooked the Pacific Ocean, you know, at dawn. And I mean, it was just, and then I drank 2 weeks later after I got home.
Mm.
You know, so it wasn't very effective, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I filled out the relapse prevention program and it just didn't work too well.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at step one, you know, powerless over alcohol, and my life became unmanageable. That was kind of the first stint of my life becoming unmanageable.
Yeah.
So I came home. I landed, you know, moving out. I got a divorce because of my alcoholism.
Mm.
Not because anything necessarily was going to happen, but I saw where I was going. And
yeah.
I didn't want my daughters to see that. Mm. I had a wonderful wife, love my kids, but alcohol was more important. So, you know, so I moved out and I started drinking. And in my divorce decree, I couldn't drink around the girls.
Mm-hmm.
So in the next 6 years, I had them every weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And there was only one time in 6 years that I had a drink in front of them. And so I thought I did pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But watch out for Sunday night at 6 o'clock when they left to, you know, Saturday morning when they arrived. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I did nothing but drink around the clock.
Mm-hmm.
So, long story short, over the next, you know, from 2003 to 2014,
mm-hmm.
It got pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in well over 50 hospitalizations and detoxes.
Wow.
I mean, frankly, I stopped. You know, I stopped counting at 50.
Yeah.
It's probably 75 or 80.
Wow.
you know, in I've been in 4 full-blown rehab centers, one for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the point where I just could not stop on my own. Mm-hmm. So he's talking about powerless. You know, I just could not stop on my own. And I just really got to the point of desperation. And frankly, there were periods of time, you know, through that where I did okay. I mean, I like to tell people, hey, I was sober 95% of the time, which was true, but that other 5% was absolutely killing me. I mean, it was devastation. I was really struggling. So in 2014, you know, I was in a really tough relationship, very narcissistic, very selfish.
Uh-huh.
She was. and it was a challenge for me. And, you know, I like to look back and say I drank a lot because of it. And, you know, I mean, I now own it. But
mm-hmm.
There was one time in about 2013-ish, or I can remember I was at a conference out in Colorado. I'm on my balcony and I'm talking to my sponsor from my program. And I'm overlooking the mountains, gorgeous mountain view. And he goes, hey, how's your week going? Oh, it's an amazing week. You know, now, meanwhile, I didn't sleep at all that week. You know, mm-hmm. I worked the whole time and, you know, didn't drink. But, you know, I said, you know what? I said, I feel really good. I was almost, you know, hypomanic or manic or whatever. I said, man, really great week. Just really nailed it. Oh, it's going great.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember saying to him, I said, you know what? I've got this.
No.
And I drank all the way home.
Oh.
And I gave up 13 months of sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I learned from that is I don't have that. I don't have this.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So in 2014, I was working, you know, for a company. I was doing executive level enterprise sales. And I went to a conference in Palm Springs. I got probably 4 months sober at this time.
Mm-hmm.
I went to this conference, and the first 3 days, I can remember, I was sitting in a restaurant in the airport going out there at 5:30 in the morning, and I was sitting there getting coffee, and I was going to get some eggs, and the guys next to me were drinking Bloody Marys, and the waitress said, do you want one? I said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it just reflexes, and I had one, and I drank all the way out there. Well, I kept the wheels in the car for the first 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a little bottle of vodka in my backpack, but, you know, to help manage shakes and whatnot. But the last, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I went through the last 4 days of the conference in a blackout. I have no memory of what happened during those 4 days. That had never happened to me before. My boss came to my hotel room Saturday morning and had a pad of papers. He's kind of patting them. He says, Glenn, do we have a problem here? And I was bombed. And I'm like, yeah, we probably do. And I turned around and went to bed.
Jeez.
Went out. My girlfriend called, you know, the cops for well-being visit. So I was 6 hospitals in 1 week. And I started the first one in Palm Springs. Finally made my way back. So, you know, 6 hospitals, I ended up in detox. I was in detox for 8 days.
Mm.
It was just terrible detox.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't sleep. And so I went into a program outside of Chicago, you know, where I remember going in the first day and I was still really hurting. And,
mm-hmm.
and I went in and said, look, I will do anything you tell me to do because I cannot stop drinking. I said,
mm-hmm.
and for the first time, I said that before and it sounded real sexy. For the first time, I really, really meant it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it. So I stayed with them 4 months. You know, I was in inpatient for 30 days and
mm-hmm.
I stayed in the sober program for 3 months after that. And I literally did everything they told me to do. And, you know, there's some rituals that we did every day in the morning upon awakening, and at night, you know, when we retire, we reflect on our day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people say, hey, it takes 30 days to establish a new habit. Well, I must go on the slow train because, I mean, it was 4 months, and it took me 4 months to finally get it.
Yeah.
And, And I still do that stuff today. I mean, it has changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I was finally powerless over alcohol. My life became unmanageable. My daughters, who I love the crap out of, wouldn't even talk to me anymore. They wrote me off. They were embarrassed. They actually despised me. You know, I did some test in rehab, you know, how much money, and I spent over $3 million. You know, I stopped counting at $3 million.
Wow.
I'm not doing this anymore. And, you know, I mean, I lost everything to alcohol. I had a gorgeous, I had everything materialized you'd ever want to know. And at one point, I'm kneeling in the rain in my car trying to find coins to buy my next drink. And the most important thing I lost, though, is I remember one of the first, you know, weeks there in my rehab, the counselor told me to go up the dry erase board, and they said, draw a big circle. I did. They said, write everybody's name in that circle who's quote unquote on your team, on Team Glenn. Mm. Write their name in there. And, you know, after about 30 seconds, I just stood there and I started to tear up, and I said, well, I better put somebody's name in there. So I put my name in there.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was powerful to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just so I don't forget, I'll fast forward to today.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably need 2 dry erase boards. You know, I have 20 guys' phone numbers from the room that I could call at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do anything for me and vice versa. You know, I have people at the church I go to. I just got married in June.
Nice.
My daughters are talking to me again. My ex-wife actually says she's so proud of me. The boss that fired me wants to rehire. He said maybe we can work again someday. You know, we just reconnected. He just called me to ask advice on another alcoholic situation he was dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So the comparisons in those two boards are just amazing.
Nice.
So going back to step two, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity.
Mm-hmm.
So that power, what I realized when I surrendered, and I used the word surrendered to that counselor, I realized that it was no longer the Glenn show.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
People, when I was growing up, people said, hey, everything he touches turns to gold, right? Mm-hmm. You need something, you know, solve, go to Glenn. Right. So that stuck with me and I started to actually believe that. But that belief was the worst thing for me when I was dealing with my alcoholism. So came to believe that power greater than myself. I used the room. I used my sponsor and I used the guys in the room because they knew what to do so they didn't have to drink yesterday. That amazed me. You know, I'm probably good at sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't good enough to sell the grocery store clerk to sell me booze at 5:45. She made me wait 15 minutes while it's shaking and, you know, I mean, it was a mess.
Yeah.
You know, but those guys didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you know what? I'm going to start emulating what they're doing. I'm going to start doing what they're doing. Because if they stay sober, I'll stay sober.
Yeah.
You know, some people may not agree with this, and I don't really care, but for the first year of my sobriety, I took Anabuse.
Okay.
And I took it because I viewed it as another tool during my fuck it moments.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, fuck it moments when things aren't going my way. Ah, fuck it. I'm just going to go get a drink, you know. I mean, I didn't have to worry about drinking on holidays. I haven't drank on a Christmas day in probably 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
What I had to worry about was a cloudy Tuesday afternoon where I was by myself and things weren't going my way or something cranked me. And I said, fuck it.
Yep.
And I just ran. So I took Anabuse for a year. I really only needed it for 6 months, but I was afraid to get off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it for a year and then finally got off of it. But it made it very aware. I had a keen awareness of why I drank. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me time when I felt that there were times I would actually laugh. I'm like, yeah, you fucker, you can't drink.
Right. Yeah.
Now what? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So now I started working my program. I called my sponsor. I changed my mood. I changed my location. You know, there's all these tools that I use. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Today. So I really believed that the solution was in in those meetings, in that room.
Yeah.
Then step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God as we understood him. So I spent a long time on step three, and I kind of nudged my sponsor. I'm like, dude, it doesn't say figure it all out. I spent probably a year and a half on step three.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say figure it all out. It doesn't say, look at my higher power, look at God in the mirror, right? It doesn't say that. All it says is make a decision. But I hung around step three. I started going to church that really just started working for me. I started understanding it. It's a very upfront, cutting-edge church. So it talks, I grew up in the church, right? Mm-hmm. I won all the Bible drills.
Yeah.
I was my youth group president, for God's sake, mm-hmm. right? I fucking went to Liberty University.
Yeah.
So I know all this God stuff,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't.
Yeah.
I knew it, it was in my head and not my heart,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I really made a decision, and I really worked at that hard of turning things over. And that's something I still do on a daily basis, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm very involved with my church. I mean, I can remember they were kind of teaching people. They had a series on how to pray, the all reverent. So we got this pastor who's a hippie dude, long blonde hair, mm-hmm. really cool. And he gets up there, like jeans and his tattoos, and he goes, "Daddy." And I was like, oh, my gosh, he's going to get zapped, But it's just the level of relationship, and my church's motto is "Come as you are,"
mm-hmm.
right? And I thought that was cool because I thought that meant flip flops.
Yeah.
It took me a while. Again, I'm on the slow train. It took me a while to realize it's come as you are spiritually.
Yeah.
Going back to that detox, one of the first things I did coming out of detox is I went to a church service, mm-hmm. when I was in the inpatient, I went to a church service, and I can't tell you mentally and emotionally and physically how bad I felt. I mean, it was like, cheese graters running over my body.
Yeah.
And I sat in that church, and for 1 hour, I felt a level of peace. And I felt like a million bucks. Mm-hmm. I couldn't describe it. It was so night and day. So I said to myself, I just can't believe this. I'm going to stay for the next service. So I stayed for the next service.
Nice.
And the feeling continued.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to feel like hell after I left. And then the next Sunday, that great feeling came back.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing because I don't feel bad in between, but I still feel great going to those church services.
Yeah.
So that's step three. Step four and step five, searching and fearless moral inventory. That was a requirement for each one of my inpatients, so I had done four of them.
Nice.
And I'm telling you, some of them were awesome. I mean, some of them were dissertations.
Yeah.
I wasn't doing it to be real. I was doing it to impress some counselor just so I could get the fuck out of there.
Of course.
Because you had to finish one before you went out. So I did four of them. So by the time I got done doing a real one with my sponsor, I mean, some people are really lit up by steps four and five, and it's life-changing.
Yeah.
Not for me. I just got through it.
Mm.
I sat down with my sponsor. I mean, he bailed me out of so many hospitals at 2 a.m., police day. I mean, just all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
He's like, well, dude, we don't need to go, through your kindergarten crush that you might have hurt because you're, fearful or jealous or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't really, that meaningful. And then step six or seven, and tell her to have God remove all these defects of character. Man, yeah. I was ready. I was ready to start living differently.
Mm-hmm.
Then help me ask and remove our shortcomings. What I realized in my last rehab program, through like CBT therapy, what I realized is that I wasn't really that bad of a guy when I didn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the cycle going because I felt, guilt, shame, remorse, hate, self-hate, regret, resentments.
Oh, yeah.
So I would drink to erase all that stuff, and then I'd feel worse, because of that. So, I'm okay if I don't drink,
Yeah.
And, going through, step 10, which we'll get to in a second. You know, I mean, that's a daily thing that just keeps my side of the street clean.
Yeah.
So steps 8 and 9, you know, I didn't have a big list. I had 10 or less. They were powerful, though.
Mm-hmm.
There was a debt that I owed. I don't want to mention them out loud, but I owed a debt.
Okay.
$585,000.
Whoa.
And you know, my
Eric is grabbing his chest right now. You just gave Eric a heart attack with that number.
I'm telling you, and it's not pretty. And so my sponsors kept saying, "Well, when are you going to do the amends?" I'm like, "Well, my attorneys are working on it." And finally, I stood up one day. I said, "You know." I said, I'm not working a good program by saying my attorneys are working on it. I said, that's a cop-out. I said, I am going to go meet with them. And I went and across the parking lot, and I sat down. And I'm like, go to jail. Who knows where I go? But I was so believing in the program. I said, I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy says, okay, you know, I gave all my facts, all of a sudden. I said, all right, you know, your statute of limitation ends that we can collect it is August of 2018. This was like 2 years ago, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. He said, what we're going to do is we're going to put you on uncollectible until December of 2018. I said, wait, I thought you just said, you know, that, you know, as of August of 2018, I don't owe the money. He said, that's exactly what I said.
Wow.
And I mean, I'm getting chills right now. I just can't even fathom.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
How this shit works. I mean, I just can't. My ex-wife, who, I mean, I owed her $400,000. You know, I helped my daughter move into college. She's getting ready to graduate, like 3.5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
And she pulled me aside and she said, "Man, you know, I just can't believe what you're doing for these girls. How you're doing so good." So when I sat down with her, they were and my daughters, they were sick and tired of hearing words out of my mouth.
Oh yeah.
But when they saw me sober for 2 years, you know, living amends, right? They knew I had changed my life. They knew I wasn't drinking, and all three of them. I mean, my ex-wife, she said, "God, I'm not going back there." She goes, "I have forgiven you." She goes, "You are doing the right things. I can't ask for anything more." She goes, "God bless you. Just keep doing it."
Wow.
And then I called that boss who came in and, you know, patted those papers.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Hey, man, I'm calling you." And he goes, "I know why you're calling me." He goes, "You're calling me to make amends." He said, "You know, I've watched you." He goes, "You know, amazing story, amazing."
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, 8 and 9, very powerful for me. I did them exactly as it said, and very powerful.
Yeah.
And I would also recommend doing that with a sponsor so you can make sense of some things.
Oh, yeah.
So then step 10, continue to take personal inventory and where wrong promptly admitted it. I do that every day. You know, I'm still a jerk sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
I walk in the garage and my new bride is rearranging my workbench.
Ooh.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yep.
You know, so I started to go off and then I heard this guy in my room, you know, who tells stories about when, you know, he goes off with his wife, and I caught myself, and I'm like, you know, I started to walk away, and I'm like, "I'm sorry, babe." I said, "Do whatever you want." It, you know, but I'm not perfect, right? So as I'm walking to the door, I'm like, because I'm just going to change it back tomorrow anyhow.
Yeah,
know?
Of course.
So, you know, I catch myself during the day today. You know, I fuck up. Man, I'm the first one to raise my hand and own it, you know, because it's easy. My intentions are good. You know, I got a clean mind, you know, and, you know, so it's easy. So then, yes, I do pray every day. I do meditate every day. Mm-hmm. I listen to guided meditation, which has helped me since my detox.
Oh, yeah.
I listen to that almost every night. That's amazing for me to calm down and get myself out of my own head. And then, you know, step 12, you know, give back, you know. I sponsor guys. I love sponsoring guys. I had a guy today just turned 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I chair meetings for, I just gave it up. I did it for 2 years. You know, I speak at, you know, counseling centers. I'm actually looking to transition my career and help a sober living community here in Chicago. They've been around 26 years. They're looking to expand.
Nice.
You know, so I'm a fundraiser for my business, so I'm looking to help them. I'm on with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But then I'm also, you know, I'm very involved with my church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm leading a group. They have a 10-week spirituality, you know, thing at church. And you know, I'm leading that. I'm leading 9 guys for that. We're doing an ongoing study after that. On Sunday nights, I volunteer and, you know, I lead a small group of high school guys.
Nice.
I'm not even sure if I like high school guys, but I do it, and I get so much out of it. It's unbelievable, you know? So, you know, I'm always doing something. I'm always trying to give back, and as my sponsor says, who is a rock for me, mm-hmm. and a lighthouse for me. In fact, I sent him a picture a couple of weeks ago of this beautiful lighthouse. And I'm like, dude, here's a picture of you, you know? Because
nice.
He shows me where my problems are and where my blind spots are.
Mm.
But, you know, I always keep him updated on what I got going on. He goes, don't worry. He goes, you only have 3 more lifetimes to pay back the people that have helped you.
Mm.
And he's right. So, you know, I am always willing to dive in. And then, you know, one of the things that really helps me understand, and the way I like to say it is, I still fuck up today.
Yeah.
But I can say without a shadow of a doubt that I'm at least playing from the right fairway.
Yeah.
I might still swing and miss the ball. Yeah, I might hit it in the rough,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I'm not driving the golf cart over the cliff.
Yeah.
You know. You know, so probably the biggest thing, I was going to some meetings for a couple of years, and they read these things called the promises. You know, if you're painstaking about your development, you know, if you're painstaking,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you go to any lengths, you know, these are the things that we promise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was there like, you know, I was going to meetings for 2 years, and all of a sudden, you know, I turned to the guy next to me, I'm like, man, those things are pretty cool. They just start reading those. He goes, no, they read them at the end of every meeting. You know, and that's just where my head was, man. My head was
yeah.
all, you know, all over. And so finally, like, man, they're pretty good. So I actually sat down and made a list of all the stuff I wanted back. You know, I wanted a 6,500 square foot house. I wanted a nice family back. I wanted my wife back. I wanted mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And as I sit here today, I can say without a shadow of a doubt that every one of those promises are coming true.
Yeah.
Every one of those promises are coming true for me. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, and I remember that because I'm always on the slow train.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what I can say is that it looks nothing like that first list.
Yeah,
nothing. And the only thing I can contribute that to or attribute it to
mm-hmm.
is step 3: made a decision to turn our will and our lives over the care of God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only difference I see today is God's the driver, not me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's a pretty, you know, pretty telltaling sign.
Yeah.
So there's my story.
All right. Fantastic, man.
That's awesome.
Loved it.
Yeah, that's great. Right.
We got some questions for you. And, Eric's nodding
yeah.
me on, so apparently I can start. What do I got? I got a few. All right. So when you're the first person I've ever heard to have like a really, you were a late bloomer drinking. Like you were on the slow train, 100%.
Yep.
So how much of your beginning of your drinking was sort of the social acceptability, sort of like seeing your like colleagues and I guess, like career peers drinking and it being okay and it being socially acceptable. How much of that like social acceptability was sort of like a starting point for the drinking?
So I mean, I didn't have my first real drinks when I was 35.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I probably drink once every 2 months. You know, I go out and hit a band, you know, I'd have 3 beers,
mm-hmm.
you know, you know, it wasn't purposeful, right?
Okay.
So, I mean, I have a pretty good personality. I can speak. I'm
mm-hmm.
comfortable in all situations. And, you know, so I don't have a lot of social phobia. So mm-hmm. I didn't drink to feel different.
Okay.
You know, like a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I did feel pressure, you know, earlier on out of college. You know, I was a non-drinker, and I would go to business functions, and I wouldn't drink, and I felt, you know, like an odd wheel. So
yeah.
When I had a beer in my hand, yeah, it took that away. But then also when I was trying to get sober,
mm-hmm.
and this was big for me, when I was trying to get sober, a lot of people, you know, when I went to business functions, I didn't want to be known as an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be known as a non-drinker, you know, so I would play the game. You know, I pulled the waitress aside. Hey, can you give me some cranberry with some lime in it and stir? And you know, and I played all those games.
Yeah.
And just like they say, if you hang out at the barbershop long enough, you will get a haircut.
Yep.
If you play those games and try to pretend you're a drinker and you're a non-drinker, I relapsed more times over that than probably anything.
Yeah.
You know, and so I have confidence today. And I value my sobriety so much. I'm like, I don't give a fuck what you think. I don't give a fuck what you say.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have clients today. They don't pay me enough to challenge my sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm like, I don't drink. Well, yeah. Why don't you drink? It's not good for me. Thanks.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm rather assertive, if that's the right word. I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, I'm assertive today, but there was a lot of times that I would be challenged about the social and, oh, what's somebody going to think? And,
yeah.
Oh, I better have it, you know, oh, I better pretend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know what? I am so over that.
Yeah.
Good.
All right. Eric?
So, yeah. Yeah.
What do you got?
So I want to stick to the same kind of, that same question sort of as like, the late starter, because I mean that's kind of it's kind of a rare breed, I feel like, in the recovery community. Or maybe I started when I was young, so I don't know. Does that ever, when you're in a meeting and you're talking to other people, do you ever feel different or compare? I mean, obviously from your story, you're totally, you know, one of us, right? But like, do you ever compare out sometimes because of that age gap? From when you really started, your addiction really started to pick up to kind of, like, do you ever compare out from that perspective?
No, I'm very grateful I didn't start when I was 14 or 13.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I work with a therapist. I mean, I do all stuff, sorts of stuff today to stay on the right track. And, you know, I've always had more isms. You know, I've always had the addictive nature. I've never had one of anything. I mean, it's easy for me today to have none than it ever has one of anything. So I'm probably grateful when I hear those stories. You know, I had a very good childhood. I was successful at everything. And I, you know, I fed my ego in other ways, and I fed my needs in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. All right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
But what it also does is now I got a 14-year-old stepson, scares the fucking shit out of me that,
oh yeah,
you know, that he may feel awkward and, hey, there, let me have a cocktail. Let me, you know, because what you said, there's so many, the large percentage start young.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hmm. All right. Which question am I going to go with? Okay. This sort of goes with, you brought up like that circle exercise that you did in the one treatment facility.
Mm-hmm.
And like the one thing that like came to my mind for that is like humility. And you sound like you said, like you were always successful. You went to college. You were accomplishing all these things, and then sort of down the road into your life when things were falling apart from when you had them together. How important in like the beginning of your recovery was like humility and like that really that surrender and admitting to yourself that like, hey, I might have been successful, but I need to start learning how to get success in sobriety and in recovery.
Yeah, so I can remember, in fact, one of the, you know, I mean, for a long time, I called it one of the highlights of my career. I remember the, you know, annual meeting for a corporation, a major corporation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can remember the president of the company mentioned my name seven times. I'm in charge of seven major projects. I was running seven different business units. And, you know, I've looked at that many times and said, you know, that's the highlight, right? That's the bar. You know, yet, you know, recently over the last 6 months, I'm like, that's probably the worst thing that could have happened to me.
Yeah.
I've always had an ego problem. Mm. But when you go to six hospitals in 1 week and I mean, I surrendered because I tried it my own way so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And I always landed up drinking again, disaster, what hospital, what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been humbled. And in fact, it's almost to some degree the opposite effect now, right? I mean, I still question things. Mm-hmm. You know, my confidence still is not all there yet. I do things and I question. I'm like, well, is that right? You know, am I thinking about the right way?
Yeah.
You know, where I never would have questioned things before. But I know today I have a thinking problem.
Mm-hmm.
I know if I don't do my program and plug in and connect and do my community and do my program and I know for a fact in 5, 6, or 7 days, I will convince myself that I can drink, that it will be different for me this time.
Yeah.
I know that. And I have to humble myself and remember how to play the tape.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know what, man, you've been down this road before.
Yeah. All right. What you got, Eric?
So, I mean, so I guess let's focus a little bit on kind of the, you know, corporate America aspect of your story. You know, I work in corporate America, so I understand some of the stuff you're talking about, like when you were saying, you know, the functions after, you know, a conference or something, right? It's like, why aren't you drinking, right? Like, and there's that line of questioning and it's just like, you know, shut the fuck up. Like, you know, why are you asking this? Like, if you're asking this, like, you're the one, you know, who feels insecure right now because I'm not holding a drink. But like being in corporate America and being in recovery, sometimes that can kind of, I don't know, it can feel kind of rough. At least, you know, for me personally, I don't bring it up. No one knows. I'm completely anonymous in that fact. So you were kind of saying that you're not anonymous with your job. Like, is that why, I guess, how do people feel when they know that, you know, you are in recovery? Do you get negative responses or is it usually positive?
All right, so let me clarify. Up until 3 months ago, less than five people in my business life, and I've got 1,500 some C-level connections on LinkedIn, and I mean, less than five people knew that I'm an alcoholic, knew that I went to treatment. You know, less than five.
Wow.
You know, I think in the last 30 days or 90 days since I'm transitioning to that role, I've been more vocal about it, right? So up until that point, as clarification, when I said, hey, I'm not drinking, I never told anybody that I was in recovery. I never told anybody I was alcoholic. Mm. I'm just like, I'm not drinking. It's not your fucking business. Why?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Nice.
But because of my role, you know, I'm raising funds for this sober community nonprofit. I went to one of my former senior executives at one of my jobs, and I'm pitching him at 6 a.m. at his house while he's cooking breakfast in his underwear, and I'm pitching him for 50 grand. And I said, Scott, do you know why I am so passionate about this? He says, no. I said, because I am an alcoholic. And I chose to break my anonymity with him because of my level of relationship I have with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he stopped. He looked at me. He goes, are you really? And I'm like, yeah. He said, I never knew that. I said, well, because I was sober for most of the time that I worked, you know, with you, you know? And then it's funny because just like you said, in those situations, people start feeling self-conscious, right? Mm-hmm. So for the next 4 minutes, he's telling me about how he's not an alcoholic, right? And how he drinks and you know, so I just sit there. I'm like, man, I don't care what you do. You got a shot right now. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I just can't drink. I'm not judging you. That's not what I'm about. So when people give you crap for not drinking, first of all, the reality of it, they don't really give a flying fuck.
Yeah.
Unless they have a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if they have a problem, then they start to make it your problem. And I refuse to allow that to happen.
Yeah. Nice.
That's awesome.
That's actually like really funny because.
Can you clarify it?
Huh?
Did that clarify it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sure. Yeah, it was perfect. It's funny how you said it like he was like, oh, this is how I drink, because I'm in the restaurant industry, and like I work with people who like still do drugs and shit like that. So I'm around people who are fucking high and fucking up their lives and whatever. I don't like, I don't have to preach to them. Like they know where I'm at. Like I've broken my anonymity. Like they know what I'm doing, and they'll be like, oh, well, I don't use like that. And I'm like, I don't care, dude. Why are you explaining this to me? Like I didn't ask. And they're just like, well, I just smoke like a little bit, like every day. And it's just like, okay, cool. I don't care. But just you saying that just totally, how many times that happens to me. Oh, that's funny. All right, so I got a question. As you were like going through the steps, definitely talked about step three quite a bit, and then you went through them all. Step three is my like pretty much one of my like go-to steps, because like I'm constantly having to turn my will and my life over to powers greater than myself. I'm not one of those people. I'm not huge on prayer. My prayers pretty much just consist of like thank yous, just hey, thanks for having my feet hit the floor instead of my head today. I'm waking up. But
nice.
Yeah. And so like prayer for me is like a little bit different, and I don't subscribe to the you just pray it and it just all gets solved. I believe there's like an action inside of spirituality. Like my higher power really like gives me the feet to do the legwork, you know what I mean? And so like how much do you think like there is like there's action in person in spirituality? You can't just like pray for it and then it'll happen.
Yeah, so a couple things. You know, I had a buddy of mine in college. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, I went to good old Christian Liberty University. Mm-hmm. And he would get on his knees and he would pray that he would get an A on his test.
Mm-hmm.
He would never fucking study.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be all disappointed and he got a D.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's God's will for me. God's testing me. I'm like, dude, you're a fucking moron. Study. That's, you know, I mean, God gave you talent to study and to prepare, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I learned how to pray through my church, and two prayers that I always used to pray and they were never answered, and I was so bitter. I hated God because he didn't answer them.
Mm-hmm.
One was, God, I want $1 million.
Oh,
and the second one was, God, please stop these shakes.
Mm. Yeah.
Because the shakes would send me to an insane level in my brain.
Yeah.
And he never answered them, and I was so bitter.
Mm.
However, this is how I look at prayer today, and I have one more follow-up after this.
Mm-hmm.
God did answer those prayers. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
He gave me talent and skills where I can go out and make $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a program and a sponsor and a relationship with him that I can work on a daily basis so I never have to fucking take a drink and get the shakes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So he did answer those prayers. Lastly, learning how to pray. I don't pray for shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I pray, you know what, God? Dude. You know, I call him dude. That's my personal nickname for him. I'm like, dude, I feel like shit right now. I need help. Mm-hmm. I need patience. I need perseverance. I need just to be able to handle this. And I also use the serenity prayer a lot. I use that every single day.
Yeah.
And earlier I just mentioned about my group of nine guys, and, you know, it's a spirituality, you know, three of the guys are seekers and trying to find the relationship with God or whatever. So one of the exercises from this book that we do, it says, write out a prayer to God. And it says, make it a real prayer in your words. Don't make it churchy church.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he says, hey, can I like raise his hand. He says, hey, can I read mine out to the group? And by now, we're a pretty tight-knit group.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is like 5 weeks in. We've shared a lot of stuff. I shared my story. They shared their stories.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I'd like to read my prayer. I'm like, yeah, sure, go ahead. He goes, dear God, you're a goddamn motherfucker. I fucking hate you. What you fucking did to me and my life. And he goes on and on.
Oh, yeah.
Like for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys, I mean, we're stunned.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in the church by the fireplace. I mean, and I'm like, dude, I'm so far over my head right here. Help me know what to say. You know, yeah. I had no reaction. I was paralyzed.
Yeah.
So I said to him, I said, what happened after you prayed that? He said, you know, he said, I really thought that God was going to push me away.
Mm.
But damn it, he leaned in. He said, man, I felt him hug me. I felt him say, hey, man, you know what? No, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to be pissed.
Yeah.
I'm here. I love you. And that's the kind of shit for me today. That's just, you know, and what I have found out about prayer unequivocally is that prayer changes the prayer. So the fact that I pray,
I like that,
means I get out of my own head.
Yeah.
I get out of thinking that I'm God.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surrendering, you know. And when, you know, step three about our wills, and we sit there and sit, you know, I talked to a guy and I was joking. I said, yes, you know, this is when I was on step three.
Mm-hmm.
When I had lunch with him, I'm like, yeah, this whole God's will shit. I said, it's not working for me because I wake up and God doesn't fill out my Outlook calendar.
Yeah.
And he sat there, and I was trying to be funny. He sat there, you know, 30 seconds, and he comes back. He said, well, let's start with this. He said, let me ask you if you could start here.
Mm-hmm.
He said, can you make a list of what you know God doesn't want you to do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I'm like, holy shit, man, that's pretty good stuff, because I have a pretty good list right there.
Yep.
You know, drink is one of them.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You know, so prayer is amazing for me. You know, I remember I was about a year in, I prayed every night. And one night, I had about 3 minutes. I call it a snippet of peace.
Mm-hmm.
3 minutes where I felt that. It was almost like the feeling I felt when I was in church, like that first week and ongoing. And I said to myself, that's it. That is peace.
Yeah.
And if I keep doing what I do, I keep doing the next right thing, I will get more of that.
Yeah.
And about 2 weeks later, I had it again. And now I get it often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That was perfect.
Yeah.
What else you got, Eric?
So you were mentioning sponsorship, and I guess something that's kind of interesting, I'd like to get your opinion, like, not your opinion, I guess your experience with this, is that you said you have worked at an executive level since you were 35. And I'm just wondering, how has your leadership skills from corporate America translated to leadership from a sponsorship perspective and helping people and leading them through the steps?
Mm. Nice.
Hey, great question. Okay. I didn't start sponsoring people until about a year ago. Mm-hmm. A guy came up to me. Probably honesty is the best card that I play today. Guy came up to me. He goes, "Man, I really like what you had to say. You've come up to me and talked to me a couple times. You've made me feel good. Can we go talk about sponsorship?" So I said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you mind if I invite my sponsor with us?" He goes, "Nah, because he's in the room too." Mm-hmm. So we went out to dinner, and I said, "Hey, look," I said, "I'd be glad to sponsor you." I said, "But I'm telling you," I said, "I've never done it before. I have no idea what to do or how to do it." I said, "But I'll give you my best." And I said, we use the phrase wax on, wax off, right? And mm-hmm. sometimes you're like, "Well, I don't want to wax on, wax off. I don't care. The Machu or whatever the guy's name is, tells you to do it." And he said, "I will do that." So, I've had 6 sponsees now, and I do all kinds of crazy stuff with them.
Nice.
I push the envelope, and I have no idea what I'm doing.
Do you ever actually make them wax on and wax off?
So, not physically, but almost. In fact, I had a joke the other day. I was talking to a doctor that's in our room. He had heart problems, right? So I was just checking in with him, and I said, "Hey, tell me if you need anything." I said, "Because I have some sponsees that I'll send over to help serve you." And he started laughing. He thought it was funny. But, I asked him to do crazy stuff. And, in fact, there was one guy that said, "I'm just not going to do that." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Then I invite you to go find somebody else." And that's taking your own will, man. That guy was saying, I got this.
Yeah.
We said, I'm not going to do that stuff. I don't feel comfortable with that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, "Okay, go find somebody else."
Yeah.
Meanwhile, when he said he wasn't going to do it, he was drinking.
No. Well, there you go.
So, I mean, come on.
Yep.
Come on.
Yeah.
So I would say, from my leadership skills, the biggest thing that I've learned is listening.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. There's a lot to be said for listening, and that's something that takes so many other spiritual principles with it. It takes patience. It takes compassion. It takes that understanding, because sometimes it's hard. Especially with somebody who's actively drinking or using, and they're being open and honest with you, but you realize from what they're sharing with you, you're just, at least in my head, I'm just you're being fucking stupid. What you're telling me, mm-hmm. and your actions, you're being fucking stupid. And I just want to tell them, I just want to rub my forehead and just be like, "Stop being fucking stupid, and maybe things will get better for you."
You must know my sponsor, because that's his favorite line with me.
Yeah,
he said, "What's the fucking stupid, or it's none of your fucking business."
Yeah,
that's his two favorite lines.
Yeah, my grand sponsor always tells me, he's like, "Hey man, I'm just waiting for that sound," and I'm like, "What sound?" And he's like, "The sound of your head popping out of your ass," and I'm like, "Oh great, thanks man."
That's awesome.
Yeah. He's like, "I'll just hear that loud pop, and then I'll just text you and be like, 'Yep, it's out of your ass now, isn't it?'" And I was like, "Yep, now it is." All right. You're done?
I'm tapped, yeah.
Do you got any more? No more questions? Nothing?
Tapped.
All right. Tapped. I don't think I have any more questions.
What's up? There's one more quick thing that I just feel like I share is,
mm-hmm.
And I tell my new bride this, and she fucking hates it. But I said, one of the key things that I've learned is how to suffer better.
Ooh, yeah.
She's like, "You don't fucking suffer. You don't know what suffering is." I said, "No, first of all, I do know what suffering is."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and I have a picture in my office of this gorgeous Ferris wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the keys to my sobriety, is beautiful blue sky background, nice gold Ferris wheel, gorgeous cars, right? And that's what my life is today. So when I had those fuck it moments, those fuck it moments are when the Ferris wheel would be down at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and I'd look at the trash, and I'd smell the engine running, the oil, and I'd look at the people that are looking at me, and I hated that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what, and you know, there's sometimes that I'm up top and I'm enjoying the view and everything's great. And sometimes I'm in the middle, like the cloudy Tuesday afternoon, you know, where nothing much is going on.
Yeah.
But what I have learned, and I have that picture everywhere, because what it reminds me of is it doesn't matter where I'm at on that Ferris wheel. Even if I'm at the top and I'm loving life, I remind myself, enjoy it, because the Ferris wheel will move. Mm. And when I'm at the bottom and I'm absolutely hating this, and you know, sometimes the damn Ferris wheel goes around so fast,
yeah,
because, you know, I'm at seven different points throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
You know, but I always remind myself that it's going to move, no matter what spot I'm in, good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah,
that thing is going to move. And then one last thing is those cars on it. It matters who is in the car with you, who is riding. And yeah. I've got all the bad people out of my car.
Yeah.
I'm very selfish who is in my car today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. Eric was sitting here just mouthing to me. He was like, I love that. That's great. That's a great analogy.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, man. Love that. All right, man. We loved it. You did a great job. We really appreciate
you
coming on with us. Eric, cue the clap track. You're terrible golf clap.
Nice golf clap.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, man. Well, we'd like to thank our guest, Glenn, for joining us today.
Yeah.
Here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. Well, again, thank you, Glenn. You did a great job, man. Keep listening.
You guys rock.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter. Invite your friends. If you have anybody you know that wants to come share with us, by all means, let them contact us.
Always looking for speakers.
And, follow us on Twitter, Facebook. Help us out, and we'll keep helping you out, man. We appreciate you coming on. Everybody
Thanks a lot,
guys. Absolutely, brother. Everybody out there, stay safe, stay clean.